Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we bring you an insightful discussion on the latest issues facing the Catholic Church and the culture we live in from a theological perspective. Today we're discussing Mary as a model for women today. Joining us, we have a great panel, a fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Jennifer Bryson. She joins us from Nebraska. We also have EWTN's Vice President of Theology as normal, Colin Donovan. He's in our theology studio. And we finally have our friend, philosopher, mother, and author of Something Wicked, Why Feminism Can't Be Fused with Christianity, Carrie Gress, and she joins us from Virginia. Well, this austere panel was with us last month, and we got such great reaction, we had to have you back to talk about another topic, this time talking about Our Lady and her role in the church, and not only in the church in many ways, but how she's seen in society. Let me ask you, Colin, as our resident theologian there, you know, recently, you know, there was some discussion about Mary's titles, you know, and whether she was or wasn't this particular person inside the church. And, you know, some people thought when it was kind of put down that maybe they were putting down Mary. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah, it was the statement regarded the use of the expression co-redemptrix, which had known to be used by popes and theologians in recent decades and even going back to the early 20th century. And so the final conclusion of the argument or the document was, and this was sort of actually followed it because debate came out of the document, was that ecclesially as a church, this expression co-redemptrix, that Mary had some, you know, like the pilot, co-pilot analogy, was in some way cooperating and bringing to us salvation. This expression would not be used by the church, but it could be used in theological context. And I think it was an important distinction because in the very document which said that co-redemptrix was an expression that could not be used, it laid out an excellent history of Mary's role and cooperatively from, you know, from her conception to the end of history. And so what it basically showed us, I think, is what Scripture shows us. And that is, at the beginning of history, we have a man and a woman, Adam and Eve. And we have, as the fathers of the church began saying within a century and a half or so of, well, maybe even a century of the crucifixion, that Mary was the new Eve, that just as man and woman had in its natural element this complementary man and woman, supernaturally there is a new man and a new woman. The new man, of course, is Christ, as St. Paul tells us in Romans. The new woman is Our Lady. So at the beginning of history, we have Adam and Eve, and at the end of history, we have the new Adam and a new Eve, the woman clothed with the sun, clothed with the virtues and graces and all the things that she needed to follow her son absolutely. And that is her importance, that she leads us through life in the way, and she models the perfect Christian woman.
Okay, very good. Carrie, let me ask you, in relating to Mary as model, and obviously coming out of a program that we did weeks ago talking about kind of feminism and where that falls, you also talk about the Marian aspects of the church, which obviously some people see as wonderful and some people see as overly concerning in some ways. But you say in some ways it's siloed in people's minds of what that is. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I 10 years ago, I wrote the book called The Anti-Mary Exposed. And in that book, I talk a great deal about how it is that contemporary culture has embodied this kind of woman and offered as a model, a woman who's diametrically opposed to the principles that Our Lady embodies. You know, Sue Ellen Browder, who wrote that book, Subverted, wrote for Cosmopolitan magazine, and she said that she could make up any Cosmopolitan girl, Cosmo girl story she wanted as long as the woman was not a virgin or a mother. And so we know that those things have been under attack, certainly in the culture. But what we've seen also a lot, even within this the church, is this idea of how do we make women look different? How do we almost fit in with the culture in a way that actually isn't at all in line with what the church is? And I think we often forget that the church is called Holy Mother Church, that the church is the bride of Christ. Christ is the bridegroom, and And then, of course, Our Lady is the Virgin Mother. So these concepts, we often think of them, you know, as unimportant, and yet they demonstrate very vividly that these are not, you know, womanhood is not a social construct, that these things are part of the order of creation that God created and created with the church. And I think, you know, this is where, why as Catholics, we have such an incredible opportunity and resource in the church and in the work of scholars and the lives of saints, to really just see the manifold ways and beauty of womanhood, mm-hmm. Rather than always trying to grasp at something secular and use that as our model, that we've got something much richer and fuller and certainly much more satisfying on a human, both natural and supernatural level in terms of what the church can model for us.
So Jennifer, you know, some people would say that the reality is Mary is often presented as humble and obedient, and you know, those kind of things don't really fit in. That she's really, you know, you're supposed to stay home and stay in your place. That's clearly not what the church really means, and certainly for a church that has raised up women, I think, women saints throughout the years and doctors of the church, it certainly isn't the truth. But it seems to be what the culture thinks.
Well, I am exhibit A of this. I am a Catholic convert, and I had a very secular upbringing, San Francisco Bay Area in the 1970s, very secular education in California public schools, and then Stanford and Yale. And I was raised as a girl to understand that I should do two things in life: have a career and excel at it, and show the boys I can beat them. And when I became Catholic decades later, I didn't understand, and I underestimated how much assumptions from the culture had formed me. And once I came into the church, I thought, okay, new chapter in my life, onward. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I was still carrying all this baggage. And where it came to the forefront for me was that for many years after I became Catholic, I had a very hard time with Mary. Mm-hmm. I accepted that she was the Mother of God, but she had no role in my spiritual life. And this Marian stuff, I just couldn't relate. And my spiritual life suffered that whole time, and I never made a connection. It wasn't until I began questioning feminism that I was able to open my heart to Mary. And I'm a single woman. I've never married, don't have children, but Mary's role and understanding Mary's heart of submission is what has been so meaningful to me. And that's different from very narrow prescribed roles that can depend on circumstances. Mm-hmm. Mary offers us a model of motherliness. And look at these words that Carrie mentioned, where we speak about the church as bride and mother. Our culture can't even understand those images and signs today because we have lost a sense of what woman is, mm-hmm. and connected to that, we've also had a breakdown of marriage. And I think that recentering Mary can help us to recover ourselves and these deep, deep cosmological images of what woman is, including in a symbolic sense.
It's interesting, too, in the culture today, it seems to be the idea that, you know, that men are not essential anymore, that through an autonomous situation that, you know, a woman can have a child, that's fine, and raise a child, and she doesn't really need a man. He's kind of superfluous. How do we deal with that?
Well, I'd like to turn to a book I'm translating right now from 1934, mm-hmm. the first book ever written against women's ordination. And it's also a tremendous book arguing for the Catholic woman against feminism by a great German Catholic, many haven't heard of, Oda Schneider. But importantly for your question, mm-hmm. is that she is seeing men being pushed aside in the period of liturgical removal and women almost taking over. And she says one of the most important things that women in the church can do is to get men back into the church and have man's role, mm-hmm. because we both flourish best when man and woman are there as man, as woman, in relationship to each other and to God.
Well, Colin, as the man on the panel also, it seems to be that studies have shown that really, if you're trying to project whether the children in the future will be going to Mass and following their faith, it's really gauged more by the involvement of the father than anything else.
Well, and I think all sociological studies would have proven that until they'd be jerked around by those who want to prove a different point and fashioned in their own likeness, so to speak. But I like a point that Jennifer made, this idea that one of the elements of feminism, of course, is that you got to beat the boys at their own game. Mm-hmm. You know, if Mary is model, what is it she didn't? She didn't beat the boys. She worked and complimented the boy, if you will. Mm-hmm. She cooperated with him. She assisted him. And she even, in times, as in the marriage feast of Cana, she gave him a little direct clue as to what direction salvation history should go. They have no wine. Mm-hmm. So if you look at how fractured our society is following the feminist model. Everything is fight, competition, go against everybody else, get what you want, get, you know, make your ideology the top one. Whereas the church and Christ and Our Lady mm-hmm. are fostering this model of complementarity and cooperation in the service of the good and of the society and of the family and of the nation and of the world. Until that is adopted mm-hmm. by everyone, it makes you wonder where we will end up ultimately.
Right. Let me ask you, Carrie, and even following up what Colin was saying and just the general idea of women and autonomy. It seems like, you know, even superheroes or the leads in less police dramas and all these things where mm-hmm. clearly, without a doubt, and I wouldn't doubt that the woman's the smartest person in the precinct, but I doubt she's necessarily the fastest or the strongest, but yet there seems mm-hmm. to be this push, I think, as you've indicated, to kind of say, well, we're just as good in everything.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that idea of competition is definitely endemic to the feminist worldview. One of the things that's interesting, just piggybacking on what the others said, though, is just even to look at this ideal of autonomy in womanhood, because what we don't see actually is women in isolation, even if they're raising children. What we see is the state stepping in, and what it's led to more than anything is this idea of bureaucracy, where a woman is married to the state, and it's mm-hmm. actually the state that's providing the things that a husband typically would have provided, mm-hmm. Especially in light of the fact that women are so vulnerable when they have small children. They're so limited by those children. And this is really what the father mm-hmm. provides. And when he doesn't provide it, someone has to. Mm-hmm. But you can also see how this really threatens the role of the family and certainly the faith. When you're disintegrating a family, then the government really has to step in and take over, and that's where the swelling happens. But I think also you see then women being very possessive of government programs and the government in general. This is why we have so many issues with the women's vote, you know, predominantly going more towards swelling of government and more subsidies and whatnot. So I think that's important. But one of the things that we also are dealing with is this idea of misplaced compassion in women. It's this idea that we somehow think that just if we feel something strongly enough and intensely enough, then it will be. And, you know, this is exactly what we're seeing in those Marvel movies and you know, obviously doesn't match the reality at all. Mm-hmm. Our family knows a lot of Marines, and we know that there's a huge discrepancy, even in the testing between male Marine officers and female officers, just because the body size, you know, the upper weight strength that the women have is so much weaker than men. You know, that alone is mm-hmm. an issue. But I think this is really where, you know, one of the things that we can do as Catholics to start thinking in a more Marian way is getting back to this idea of the local, of understanding that, a woman's womb is the first home of her children, but also just in the way mm-hmm. in which we care for those around us. It has to happen on a local level instead of this abstraction of I'm going to save the world, you know, by working for people that I'll never meet. Right. Instead, we need to understand that the real sacrifice and the gift of self has to happen on a local level. And that's really where we're called to be and really thread mm-hmm. together that tapestry of society and our families and our communities, because that's what's missing. This is right. what we're seeing in spades between the mental illness, anxiety, depression, but also the deep loneliness that people have. And much of that is because women have removed themselves from these spaces like our parishes and our larger families and whatnot, schools and whatnot. So people are facing a kind of isolation that they didn't have before when women were really there to sort of focus and spot and see who needs what. And I think that's one of the things that Our Lady does so well, you know, is direct people to what it is that needs to be done in a healthy but local way.
Right. It's the people who love humanity, but they just don't like their neighbor. Or they love humanity, they just hate people. Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Jennifer, to follow up on something that said earlier there, it struck me, the idea of this dependency on not like the church and your neighbors like it used to be, but this dependency on the government. Did this just happen by happenstance, or do you think some of this was planned?
I think Carrie's term of bureaucracy, the woman who has needs and becomes basically married to the state because the wholesome natural relations aren't there, is really great. And I see this when I study the earliest days of feminism in the late 1700s, early 1800s, that this autonomy of woman that is emphasized requires her detachment from her role as wife, as mother. And here we have Mary showing us the exact opposite, that today we have the beautiful image of the Holy Family at a time when family's breaking down because of Mary's love in her role as Joseph's wife and as the mother of Jesus. And changing what woman is going to lead into a breakdown in those fundamental relationships. And yet, as Carrie said, which is so true, women have special vulnerabilities. Physically, the body is different. It's going to be weaker. And it's the woman who can carry a child. And giving birth to a child, raising a child needs a family. And when those connections aren't there, she's not going to be the autonomous woman. She's going to turn to the state.
Right. Well, Colin, let me ask you, you know, some would say that, you know, the idealization of Our Lady, that Marian theology, in a sense, has unintentionally set up unrealistic expectations for women. How do you see that?
Well, in a way it does. It wasn't our Lord's example meant to set up maybe an unrealistic expectation in a certain sense that we could all be Christ-like? Or if you think you can go around and do miracles, yeah, maybe that's probably, if you think you're the Son of God, you know, in the lower order of nature rather than the order of grace, then yeah, perhaps it's gone a little too far. So I think it's no different in a way with Our Lady, and that is, she had a providential role by God's plan to model a new woman as opposed to the old woman, Eve. Mm-hmm. And so in doing so, she gives us an examples of the way to do that through love, through charity, through her influence, not just on Christ. We have to remember that while she was alive, the apostles looked to her. John cared for her. At Pentecost, she was there. So she had this maternal role, as the church is said to have today, well, from the very beginning, from the foot of the cross, when Christ said to John, "Behold your mother," and to Mary, "Behold your son," she's had this maternal relationship. She's had it with the apostles. And so she continues to have us today in order to say to us what she said at, you know, Cana, do whatever he tells you. And it's a beautiful example of different gifts being brought to find solutions for various problems in bringing the feminine and the masculine together, complementary fashion, in order to move humanity forward, not just in the order of grace, but also in the order of nature. Mm-hmm. And I think when that is kept in mind, with all the limitations, which the church pointed out, which the Pope pointed out in approving that document on co-redemptrix, always remembering that Christ was God, Mary was not. And that distinction is always has to be taken into account, knowing that in the order of grace, she has a role, but in the order of nature, he is God, and his role cannot be replaced.
Let me ask you, Carrie, you know, one would think with all this feminization thing that the big push for women to become priests would be, you know, accelerating. But you're saying that's not really happening. There's something more subtle. Mm-hmm. Explain.
Yeah, so it's been fascinating. I went back. There was this book written by Donna Steichen back in the 90s called Ungodly Rage. And right. I read it maybe a decade ago. And it was so satisfying because almost everything that she mentions in that book is gone in terms of the parish level, women really pushing for the priesthood. I think the real danger that we're living with today is this effort to try and smuggle in a lot of first wave feminist ideas. And this is why Jennifer and I are both doing a lot of work on the first wave and really trying to expose what it is, because there's been this sense that the second wave and beyond are bad, but the first wave was really good because it was just about voting. And you know, I think as she and I have both discovered dramatically and much to our horror, you know, there's really nothing good about the first wave either, that it has very clear problems with it. And you know, I know some of this is well intended. I think that people want to find a way to reach women, you know, who aren't faithful or don't believe in the church or, you know, don't know God. So I think that's some of the motivation for it. But I think the problem is it being smuggled in as this is John Paul II's feminism instead of what it really is, which is a distorted view of womanhood. But I think the better way, and, you know, much of this gets back to this idea of Mary, is to really demonstrate how Our Lady provides for us a clear model, not just in obedience and submission, two words which I think, you know, we really have to grapple with and try to understand them, what they really mean, instead of what the kind of knee-jerk cultural reaction is to those words. But beyond that, we can even see, Our Lady offers us a model in three ways, one of which is the desire for the good. She always does God's will, and what it is that she desires happens. It's because she's so deeply connected with God's will. And we see this desire in women. We talked earlier about, the women wanting to save those who they never meet, that we, you know, as long as I don't have to engage with real people, I'm fine. But that's a core desire, I think, at the heart of woman, is this desire to help others. Right. We also see it in the desire to be in deep relationship or to mother others. The desire for women to have pets now, you know, this is what's filling that hole. But women are really meant to obviously mother their children and to be wives to their husband and be in deep relationship. And Our Lady teaches us how to do that in an ordered way. And then the third thing that I think is hugely important is the idea of beauty, because Our Lady is always called beautiful. In fact, when I was doing research for my book, The Marian Option, every single apparition of Our Lady, the priest or the visionary said, she was the most beautiful woman you've ever seen. Even St. Therese said she was so beautiful, you would want to die just so that you could see her again.
Really?
So we come to understand women's desire. You know, we often look at it as just vanity, but this desire for beauty is really important. And when it's ordered and it's Marian, then suddenly our beauty comes from the inside. You know, you can think of someone like Mother Teresa, who is objectively not a beautiful woman, but everybody says she's beautiful because the interior beauty shines forth through them on the natural level, the supernatural comes through.
Right.
And I think that's something, you know, just another way where women can come to understand why it is that we want to spend billions of dollars on cosmetics and to be beautiful, when really Our Lady demonstrates that it's something that happens on a much deeper level. Right. And, you know, it's important because it points to God and really valuing that instead of belittling it or distorting it.
Right, right. That inward, even the glow of you say, with a pregnant woman, those situations. Mm-hmm. Now, Jennifer, let me ask you a question. You know, I heard a survey recently where they talking about empathy, and they were talking about the impact on society in general, let alone the church, and the idea that basically if somebody does something and it's not their fault and they're being treated bad, both men and women have basically the same empathy. But if there's a situation where clearly somebody looks like they clearly were in the wrong and did something they shouldn't, men don't have that empathy, but women continue to have that empathy. How does that impact us?
Well, I can't speak for the men, but with the women, where motherliness is a very, very deep part of what a woman is, and this includes for women who don't have children. Even the example Colin just mentioned with Jesus on the cross, when he's about to die, he says to John, "Behold your mother." So there's going to be a role there for Mary for motherliness, towards somebody who isn't her son. And for me, that's an image of ways that I, as a single woman, can incorporate motherliness into my life. But it's going to be through relationships. And I experienced this wonderfully. I moved just a little over 2 years ago to Nebraska, where there's an amazing Catholic community here. And I have local relationships where I can serve and help. And I don't need to have this urge that if I want to care about somebody who's hurting, that the only way that the activism mindset would present is go save the world. And I think that where women through feminism and our modernist culture have become very detached from the natural structures of relationship and local community, that an excessive overpouring of this desire to care, it doesn't know where to go. And sometimes it's going in unhelpful directions.
Right. Well, Colin, just as we wrap up here, we've got about 30 seconds. Why don't you give us a sense of the closure to this topic?
Well, I think we've all been trying to say how beautiful an example of womanhood that Mary is, and that if people could, you know, get to know her, not just by reading books about her, but also through their prayer life, then especially women can learn to imitate and to model that. But even men can do that too, because men need an increase of compassion. We tend to be more analytical, as you were sort of noting. And so to be more compassionate in situations of need is something that would help us, and maybe to be more analytical in situations is something that would help women. And this is the complementarity, I think, which is intended by God.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Colin. And thank you, Jennifer. And, of course, thank you, Carrie, for being with us today once again. And we thank you for joining us, audience. And don't forget to join us next time right here on the Catholic Sphere when we bring you another topic dealing with theological issues in the Catholic Church and the culture. We'll see you then. I'm Doug Keck.